The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show. I am coming to you from the mean streets of Los Angeles, California today, and I got a hellacious show for your ass. Thank you for hitting the download button. Sit on down or drive to work, whatever you're doing, and enjoy the conversation I'm about to have with one Adam Cole. Adam Cole, former Ring of Honor World Champion, the only three-time Ring of Honor World Champion in the history of that illustrious promotion, and also former one-time Pro Wrestling Guerrilla World Champion, holding the record for the longest reign in that title's history. Adam was coming through Los Angeles this weekend to make a shot for Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. We got in touch with each other over Twitter. Adam came by the crib here at Studio 316. We pulled up a chair, sat across from a table, eye to eye, man to man, face to face, and shot the breeze. I talked with this cat for about an hour. He's 27 years old. He's been wrestling for about 9 years. He's a hellacious worker inside the squared circle. He's a hellacious promo. What I did not know after doing my research about him, or what I found out, that yours truly, myself, Steve Austin, formerly known as Stone Cold Steve Austin, along with The Rock, were very influential in getting this young man in the business of pro wrestling. Turns out, during some karate classes, Adam saw a little bit of WrestleMania 15. Myself against the great one, The Rock. Then WrestleMania 17, the defining moment there in the Astrodome. Stone Cold Steve Austin, grass. Stone Cold Steve Austin, glass breaks, and bam, in front of 67,000 people, the BMF walk down to the squared circle. If you smell what The Rock is cooking, bam, here comes Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, coming down that aisle. And God dang it, man. Championship was on the line. The match was built, and we just exploded, and we just laid into it. That match affected Adam Cole, and he said, hey, man, this is the first time I ever got goosebumps. You'll hear him tell a story, but it's pretty cool for me to have that match all those years ago and a couple of classic matches to begin with, especially WrestleMania 17, one of my matches that I'm most proud of to influence a kid like this to get into business. And to see the kind of body of work that this guy, this young man, is putting out now. He's a lights-out performer, so it's really cool to be able to inspire someone to get into the business. And for him to pay his dues, keep his head straight, make himself available, and learn the business. And so at 27 years of age, 9 years in the business, this kid is running roughshod right now. Three-time Ring of Honor World Champion. The kid has a hellacious future, and the kid has a hellacious future in front of him, and I had a good time talking to him. I told you guys that I was talking to Adam Cole at Adam Cole Pro on Twitter, and send me some questions to questions@steveaustinshow.com, and you did. My first conversation is 1 hour long. Next Tuesday, we will come back, and I will ask him the questions that you sent in, and he will provide the answers. And before I move on to the rest of this open of this show, I'm recording the Thursday Unleashed show from the Broken Skull Ranch. Unleashed. If you've got a question or a topic you want me to cover, send it to questions@steveaustinshow.com. I will record that podcast live, live to a memory chip at the Broken Skull Ranch. I'm heading down to the Broken Skull Ranch the day before you listen to this podcast. I'm heading down there on Monday morning. I'm going to get on an airplane, get me a rental car, go get some groceries, go down there, put all my stuff in the house, go get on Buck the Mule, my Kawasaki Mule Pro FXT, and ride around the Broken Skull Ranch and look for shed horns. This is my favorite time of the year. It's like Easter for a guy that's not going to hunt Easter eggs. It's a guy hunting shed horns from a white-tailed deer. So I'm looking forward to seeing what I can find. We had a couple of really, really nice deer out there this year. And last time I went out there with my wife, we got lucky and found some matched sheds just laying there side by side. It was awesome. So I got a couple of deer located that I watched all throughout the year. Didn't shoot them. So I'm hoping to find their sheds, and it'll be something because it's always cool to go out there and see what you're going to see. But anyway, my conversation with Adam Cole is going to start in a minute. Like I said, I had a good time talking to this cat. And before I get to him, I got one more story for you. Man, I was coming back from a meeting at Kawasaki USA headquarters in Irvine, California the other day. And, man, I got out on the highway and I noticed that I was running on fumes. The little light on my dashboard came on and said, "You must gas up, or if you don't, in about 50 miles, you're going to be walking on the side of the road with a gallon can in your hand trying to get some gas for your car because you was too stupid to pull over and fill this thing up." I didn't want to be that guy. So anyway, I hit my iPhone button, hands at 10 and 2 on the steering wheel, push the Siri button. I said, "Siri, where's the closest gas station?" Siri guided me to a gas station. I parked in the gas station, put my credit card in the slot, pushed in my zip code, and then the gas pump began asking me questions. "Are you a Vons Club member? Yes or no?" "I don't know what a Vons Club is." "No, I'm not a member, and I don't want to join." "Do you want a receipt?" the machine asked me. "No, I don't want no receipt. I want about 22 gallons of gas so I can fill my tank up on F and get the F out of here." I hit the no button. "Do you want a car wash?" the machine asked me. "No, I don't want no car wash. I want 22 gallons of premium so I can get my ass out of here, go back to the crib, so maybe my lovely wife will make me a ham and cheese sandwich." I don't know what it is with the gas pumps these days. They got to ask you too many questions. At the gas pump over here by my crib, they got a television monitor on there running commercials. You put your credit card in there, they force you to watch TV. I don't want to watch TV. I ain't got time to watch TV. I got a 52-inch LCD TV in my living room I ain't got time to watch. Well, I'm lying to you. We just finished season 5 of Breaking Bad. Watched the season finale last night. Holy smokes. It's amazing what the human brain, or at least my brain, will forget in about 3 years. I didn't remember half the twists and turns. It was like watching it all over again. You know, a lot of it I did remember, but it was like seeing it from a different perspective because now I was picking up the minute details and all the other stuff, the subliminal stuff that they wrote in there. I think Breaking Bad is probably the best show that's ever been on television. The season finale. I guess I'm not giving any spoilers here, but because everybody always gets mad at me when I say something about something that I'm watching. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. You know when Walt goes over there to take out the bad guys? Well, he was a bad guy himself. There at the end. And then he kicks the bucket. But he saves, what's his name?
Jesse.
When he saves Jesse from the meth heads when they had him down there cooking in that gimmick. Man, Jesse took off like a bat out of hell, and then Walt bled out, and he died, and his cancer had come back. God dang, that was a hell of a damn finish, that damn thing. After we finished watching that, my wife and I sat there for about 2 minutes. Maybe it was a minute. Just kind of like, man, just kind of taking it all in. Did you enjoy it?
I loved it.
My wife loved it. I loved it, too. Man, that Bryan Cranston. You know what? Everybody did a hellacious job in that damn series. And hell, I ain't telling you nothing you don't know. But hell, I'll tell you something we got to do. We got to move on and get to Adam Cole. That's enough about my gas stations and all the other stuff, Breaking Bad. I got a show to run here, and I got to pack up. I'm heading to the Broken Skull Ranch tomorrow, and I need you guys to send me the questions to question@steveaustinshow.com so I can record an Unleashed podcast Q&A down there at the ranch. And part two of my conversation, the questions that you sent in, is going to play next Tuesday. And Adam Cole is Adam Cole Pro on Twitter. You could check out his website, but he don't keep it up to date, so we won't even mention that. Before we get to the Bodyhead Podcast and talk to Adam, let me take care of one of the sponsors who's helping to make the world a better-smelling place, and that's Hanes with Fresh IQ. Underwear is important. Socks are important. And after a long day of wear, we all know how both these articles of clothing tend to smell. Not good. they develop a certain aroma, let's call it the funk, and that funk happens to everyone. It's just a fact of life. I don't care who you are. So that's why Hanes invented Fresh IQ Advanced Odor Protection Technology. Hanes with Fresh IQ attacks bacteria and keeps fabric from absorbing the funk and other unpleasant aromas. That means your socks, t-shirts, and boxers smell fresher longer. So forget smartwatches and fitness trackers. This is the latest and greatest in wearable tech, the underwearable wonder of odor-controlling Hanes with Fresh IQ Advanced Odor Protection Technology. And right now, you can get 25% off your purchase of Hanes with Fresh IQ products. Just use the promo code FRESHAUSTIN. Some exclusions apply. So replace your old ratty boxer briefs, yellow t-shirts, and mismatched socks. There has never been a better time to upgrade your obsolete undergarments with all new Fresh IQ socks, shirts, and underwear from Hanes. America's number one underwear. Just go to Hanes.com and use the promo code FRESHAUSTIN to get 25% off your order of Hanes with Fresh IQ. Hanes with Fresh IQ, advanced odor protection technology, the smart way to stay fresh. Everybody's got a to-do list. Drop off a dry cleaning. Pick up some milk. Here's an idea. Let's save hundreds of dollars on car insurance. And the good thing is, you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to GEICO.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your pocket? It just may be the most rewarding to-do you do today.
All right, it's March, which means it's time for the madness. And it's crunch time in the NBA. So you know we got it all covered on the Big Podcast with me, Shaq.
And we're way more than just sports, Shaquille. So be prepared to laugh, folks, as we bring you the best basketball coverage, the biggest names in hoops, like Kevin Garnett, Chris Paul, Dick Vitale, Grant Hill, Chris Webber, and many, many more.
The Big Podcast with Shaq. Check us out with new episodes every Monday at PodcastOne.com.
The Steve Austin Show. The Steve Austin Show.
Adam Cole, welcome to 317 Gimmick Street. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you, Steve? Good to be here, man.
It's good to meet you. And when you came in, as you know, man, I'm renting this house. I live next door. And I complained to the owner of the place. I said, man, this place is just out of control. You got to get some guys in here to knock some of these vines and stuff down. So there's guys out there with chainsaws and pickaxes and stuff like that. So I apologize for all the noise and the unprofessionalism, but this is the life of the Steve Austin Podcast.
I love it, man. Raw in your face. This is it. This is where we are. This is what we're dealing with. Yeah, no problem at all.
But the rib starts with my phone rings. I look down, it's Adam Cole. He goes, Steve, I think I'm here. It says 317 on the sign. I think I'm in the, it doesn't look like the front of a house. I said, dude, are you in the alley? Because you Ubered over here.
Yeah.
You're the first guy to ever be on a podcast to come through my back door. Easy there. No innuendos. Hello, family friendly. What were you doing in the damn alley?
Man, I was just following the lead of the Uber driver. This is where he took me. He said, this is your stop. So I figured after seeing, 316, I was where I was supposed to be. And I knew I'd find you, Steve. I knew I'd find you.
God dang. We got in touch with each other on Twitter.
Yeah.
And started following each other. And I've been following your career and watching all the stuff that you do. And man talked about being on a podcast. I said, yeah, man, let me know when you come through L.A. Man, all of a sudden, you're in L.A. Where are you headed?
Yeah, no, it was perfect timing for this to work out the way it did. Actually, tonight is Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. So I have a PWG show. I've been with them for a really long time. And then right from PWG, I catch a red eye to head to Manchester, England for a group called What Culture Pro Wrestling. So it's a busy next couple of days. But as you know, busy is good in pro wrestling. So it'll be a fun few days.
Busy is good in pro wrestling. We talked about that a little bit on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Man, how long have you been in the ring now?
I'm coming up on 9 years for me in wrestling. I actually feel great. I've only had a couple of scenarios or times where I could say that I was genuinely banged up. Right now I have a nice little stitch going on the top of my head. But physically and mentally, I feel really, really good. The busier I am, the better I feel. If I take, let's say I have 2 weeks off and then I get back into the ring, that's when I'm dying the next day. If I work 2-3 times a week, which is normal for me, I actually feel my best when I keep moving.
Man, you said you had a surgery. And I was like, man, what's your kid? I texted you back. A knee?
Yeah.
And I'm figuring with the amazing stuff that you and some of your coworkers do in the ring. I'm thinking, this guy's got a banged up knee. He goes, no, I got a lump on my head. And I'm like, a lump on your head? What kind of lump? It's on your head that needs to be removed. I started watching your matches. So you had that bump on your right forehead.
Yeah.
How did that grow out to be what it was?
This is perfect because I don't think anybody really knows this story. So it's cool that I can talk about it now. But what happened was is back in October, I had an 8-man tag in Ring of Honor in Detroit. And there was a scenario where Dalton Castle ended up punching me in the head. It swelled up immediately. I think it's just swelling on the top of my head. I'll ice it a little bit and it'll go down. 6 months later, it still hasn't gone down. It's hard now. I'm like, what the heck is this thing? I go into the doctor and they said that because of the trauma on my head that my body tried to recover or heal itself. So in turn, a cyst was formed. And it was something that was going to cause me no health problems, but I eventually need to get removed because it would be there forever. So the doctor goes in. And again, I got about 8 or 10 stitches done. There was a couple done inside my head with the tendons and the muscle, and then a lot on the outside. The thing ended up looking and feeling a lot worse than I initially thought, but it's not bad. Nothing that I won't be able to bounce back from, obviously.
So they thought it was just a cyst, and it was a cyst, but and it sounds like they went a little bit deeper than they thought they were going to have to go.
Yes.
So therein lies, by the time this podcast drops on Tuesday, you will already have worked.
Right.
So how are you feeling about going into the ring? Because as we were talking before you got here,
yeah.
Like, hey, man, you get stitches in your head. You got stitches in your head. And then you got the ring. And then you got people walking from the dressing room, walking down the aisle. The ring is a great place to be. But it's one of the dirtiest environments I've ever been.
Yeah. And that's actually what worries me more so than someone busting it open or something happening as far as the stitches opening up. I'm more worried about the potential infection that could happen because there's really nothing I can do about that. But fortunately, again, there are situations and circumstances where we're forced to work when it isn't necessarily the best time to. And this is a scenario for me where I'm going to have to. I work with a lot of pros. I might find some kind of way to cover it up as best as I can. But I don't know, man. I just got to hope for the best. Hope it doesn't bust open.
That's what I appreciate. A young cat with an old school mentality. Let's talk about color a little bit.
We were talking
on the phone the other day, and I noticed in your championship match recently with Ring of Honor, lost a hell of a match to Christopher Daniels, and a great match. What was that, a kick outside, a thrust kick?
Yeah.
And he gets into the ring post.
Mm-hmm.
Legitimate hard way?
Yeah, I think so.
Think so? But my point is, it enhanced the match. I dug it. And, you know, you work with the color a little bit, and the stakes just got a little bit higher. You're a fan of color, as am I. But in 2017, man, a lot has changed since when I broke in 1989. I was 1990 Rookie of the Year. And all of a sudden, you know, we're in Dallas, and it's my first time to get a blade, do a blade job. Hell, I didn't know how to make a blade. And there's one of the veterans is helping me make my first hatchet. And so these days, you know, with everything being the way that it is, you know, back in the old days, well, even when we were getting color in the early 90s through 2000, you know, AIDS, HEP, everything was still around, but it was just wasn't really thought of. It was an afterthought. Or I don't think anybody really gave a damn.
Right.
But these days, man, just with PC, the way everybody's come up, it just seems like a real, I don't know, primitive thing to do or a barbaric thing to do. Or there's something to sticking a blade in your head and pulling it across or whatever it is. But as we were talking, you know, somehow, some way, I got busted open WrestleMania 13 and really added, you know, to that match. And
big time.
You said that one of your moments that really started turning, helping you turn the page was a night in which you got busted open. So what is your affinity for color? But as it is almost taboo in any place you go these days.
Right. I think it's a shame that it is as taboo as it is because, again, at the end of the day, when we go into the ring and we're telling a story or we're creating emotion, there's no question whatsoever that good color really adds to that dynamic. I'm not one to say that every single night there should be blood. I totally don't believe that. But if two guys are feuding for a long time and you want to take that feud or that emotion or that drama to the next level, there is zero question that blood adds a huge dynamic to that. Again, talking about this match I had in New York City with Kyle O'Reilly in 2012, when I got busted open, it was like the entire tune and emotion in the room completely changed. Everyone was on their feet. Everyone was losing their minds. Everyone was genuinely invested in myself and Kyle O'Reilly because of a little bit of blood. So I really do think, and I think, and I also think it's a shame that because, again, it is labeled as being so barbaric, there are so many other things that we do as pro wrestlers, to me, that is not only more barbaric but more dangerous than taking a small little blade and creating a little bit of blood. So much more danger to other things.
And I think, the bigger the organization,
sure,
with all the PC stuff and the corporate sponsorships, then the more it's frowned upon. But, you know, if all the athletes are tested, I mean, if you look at what goes on in the UFC, I mean, a guy or gal gets busted open, hell, every single fight, just about.
Exactly.
I mean, it's very rare that someone didn't get busted open in some way, shape, or fashion. So, but tested athletes, you know, if there's any disease, I mean, they're not going to be able to fight.
Right.
So, you know, if the guys are tested, and they are, everybody's clean, then I think that it should be okay.
Exactly.
But again, man, when you tell that to the corporate people, I don't know if it's a level of violence that they perceive that goes with it, or it's just something that people can't wrap their head around, but it's just, you're seeing less and less and less of it.
Yeah, or it could be a combination of both of what you just said, too. But again, I totally agree. If it's some independent show where guys aren't tested and people aren't sure of who's clean, who's not clean, I really do kind of get the concern there. But like you said, if it's something done properly and people are aware of whether or not they're clean, again, I don't think it's a big deal. And I think it still has its place in pro wrestling in 2017.
Man, I tell you, I look back at WrestleMania 13, and I don't go on YouTube and watch old matches myself. I get on YouTube and watch matches of some of the stuff that guys like you and other people in WWE and New Japan are doing. But when I go back to WrestleMania 13 in Chicago at Rosemount Horizon, one of my favorite buildings to work in, it ended up getting put in a sharpshooter by the one and only Bret the Hitman Hart and passing out in a pool of blood. God dang, what an iconic image. One of the most iconic images in the history of the business.
Yep.
And it was just a lucky fluke that I got busted open.
Right.
And that was really, I was on my way, but that just kind of just, golly, that guy really is tough for doing what he did, passing out a pool of blood and never giving up. So I really put the exclamation point on what I was trying to do.
Exactly, and to a lesser extent, obviously, because less people had seen it. But it was literally the exact same scenario for me. I was on my way to challenging for the Ring of Honor Television Championship. I was getting over, but I wasn't over yet, if that makes sense. Like the fans were acknowledging, and they liked me, but I was like missing that one thing that the fans really wanted to gravitate to or latch onto. And then there was an image of me when my lip was busted open and Kyle O'Reilly knocked me down and I flipped my hair up and fired up and yelled. And as I yelled, the blood was squirting out of my lip and onto his chest. And in New York, people are like, oh my God. And that was like my iconic image that still, you know, people talk about to this day.
But and through that, it's like, okay, now he's battle tested.
Exactly.
You know, he's been through some wars, and that's a great visual. But in listening to you talk about that match, I wasn't able to see it. Sounds like you were working baby.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So obviously, Kyle's got some heat on you, beating you down and in the fire through the blood.
Yep.
Here comes this young, you're a good looking guy, white meat baby face. With respect to the business,
sure,
this white meat baby face, all of a sudden he's busted open and he can cower down, he can quit, he can beg off, he can powder, he can just roll out, give up, submit. But no, when you fire up through that blood and all of a sudden you got that visual, it's like, hey, man, to the tough guys in the crowd, hey, look at this pretty boy. No, he's just pretty boy. Some bitch is tough.
Yep. And
here he comes, and the girls, okay, they're right. Like you. I mean, you're a baby. And all of a sudden, it's like, God, he's tough on top of everything else.
Yep, and that was what I needed so badly. Because, again, battle-tested is the best way to put it. Because I had had matches that people enjoyed. But I was, at the time, I was clean-shaven. I had shorter hair. I used to pump my fist and do the all cut. You know, I was still finding myself big time. So I needed...
That's that 101 fire.
Right, exactly. Every promo pick I had, my fist was bald. Still totally trying to find out who Adam Cole was. And but that, for me, that was also, too, I think, when I started to understand what does make a good babyface in this day and age, because I did need to prove that I was tough and that I could hang, and that if people poked at me enough, I wasn't going to take any crap from anybody, you know. And it wasn't always necessarily I'm always going to do what's right, and I'm always going to do what's best. I needed to have that edge, or find that edge, and me legitimately bleeding and fighting with Kyle in the ring was when I started to kind of discover that I needed to, as a babyface at that time, make sure that when it was my time to go and it was my time to fire up, that I brought it.
Okay, so then in listening to you say that, what does make for a good baby face in this day and age?
To me, I think for sure it comes down to having, again, this edge about you where, at least when the people are watching, and this is for me, is making sure that that audience at one point in time really, really wants to be you in that moment. That's been to seem like the big thing that I've really noticed, is when a baby face is getting beaten down and beaten down and beaten down, and finally when he comes back and he's ready to kick some butt and just go to town on that heel, that everyone in the crowd is so for you and wishes they could be you and is totally engulfed in the moment.
So in doing that, you're talking about a sell.
Exactly.
But that being said, yes, you have to sell, because you have to get that crowd on your side, or... To involve emotions, which is the strongest mover of any needle.
Yeah.
Great move sets are great move sets, but when you have emotions attached to the people that are doing those move sets, then everything is multiplied times 10. So people care about you, and selling, they can gravitate towards you. But along with being a great babyface and needing to sell, you've got to have some offense. You've got to have, not razzle-dazzle, you've got to have good basics, a good lockup. Your fundamentals have to be sound. I mean, you just can't just be some carefree guy who's sloppy. So you've got to be able to shine, mm-hmm. and you've got to be able to have the talent. I mean, it's a heel's job to shine that baby up, to make that baby. But
yep.
You've got to be able to be made. And you've got to have some go-to stuff or whatever it is. You know, because, I mean, would you agree that you've got to do something offensively?
Right.
Because you're not the biggest guy in the world.
Nope.
So if the promoter says, well, okay, I see you as being an underdog. Hey, man. Okay, underdog for what? One match, two match, whole run? What are you talking about? Because when I think about some people who play the underdog role, they do it so much that they just underdog themselves to death.
Exactly.
And they work themselves out of a job, because Ricky Morton is one of my prime examples. And I love the Rock and Roll Express are going to the Hall of Fame this year. Ricky Morton wasn't the biggest guy in the world. Sell his ass off. And he was almost always the underdog, but he always got his stuff in.
Exactly.
And same thing with Superstar Bill Dundee. When I used to roll into USWA and I was working with Superstar, I was 6'2", 255. I'm working with Bill. He's 5'7", 205. And I'm thinking, he's an older guy. Been in the business 20 years by the time I got to him. Well, 20 years is a grizzled vet. And smart, and Bill drew money, could cut a promo, and I love Bill, and he taught me a lot. So I'm thinking, oh, I'm 255, I guess I'm just going to beat this guy up.
Right.
Not so fast, my friend. Bill whooped my ass. He got his stuff in. So talk to me about being in the underdog role versus level, and being a step above.
Yep, exactly. Because I think, obviously, heel babyface and all that stuff is circumstantial with a lot of different people. But if I'm looking at it objectively, like when I was figuring out who I was, for me in this day and age on the independent scene, it always worked best for me because I was working with a lot of guys who were established stars already. So even though they were the heels, I would come out, no one knew who I was, and then the heel would come out and they would cheer for the heel. For me, it always worked best when the heel beat me down to the point where the audience started to get uncomfortable and be like, oh, come on, kid, fight back. Yeah. It wasn't just a little heat. It was a lot of heat, and it was aggressive heat. But I knew that when it was my turn to come back and it was my turn to fight, that I was going to bring literally everything that I had. And because I'd been beaten down so long, the audience actually would start to get behind me. That routine and that structure always worked the best for me. Because like you said, as long as at the end of the day, when it's my turn to fire and it's my turn to fight, I brought it. And then the audience was with me.
And the key thing you're saying there is this is what worked for me.
Right.
You always have your general equation, which is take me as a baby. I wasn't your traditional baby, so you didn't push me in a traditional style. Jim Ross didn't commentate for me in a traditional style. He'd go, I don't know why they like him, or, you know, you can't trust that guy. He'd always embellish, you know, instead of going with the flow of what you would do with a normal cat. So when you say, for me, that's the most important part, figuring out what works for you time and time again. You know, if someone asks me my opinion on something, well, I'll give them my thoughts. But, you know, this is coming from a guy that was 6'2", 255 in his prime and in 7 years in the business before I got that real break.
Right.
Pissed off, chip on my shoulder, you know, a physical style. That was what worked for me. But at the end of the day, fire for a baby, a mean streak for a heel. We're going to get into that in a minute. Those two things you must possess on either side. But how you do things, you have to figure out for yourself. You can look at the way everybody else has gotten over, from Ultimate Warrior to someone like Ricky Morton, and it's different strokes for different folks.
Exactly, yeah, because there were some baby faces that would be able to go out there, and in their shine, they were able to get over. Or they would only need a little bit of heat put on them, and they were able to get over. For me, that wasn't the case for me. Again, I was white meat, vanilla baby face.
Were you a different version of Tommy Dreamer when he first came out as a baby?
In some capacity, I was like the young blue chipper that people saw a lot of potential in, right, but weren't totally sold on yet. So again, because we're predominantly working for that 18 to 35 hardcore wrestling fan male demographic, and I was still finding out who I was. I wore bright colored tights and white boots and all that stuff. I was really going the traditional route. So for me, again, I needed to be that type of baby face that got just the snot kicked out of him. And then when it was my turn to fight, that I really, really brought and showed almost a side of me that they didn't realize I had in the beginning. You know, in the beginning, if I'm shining up, it's a lot different than when I'm coming back and ready to fight towards the end.
At some point in there, and trying to get some offense in, and say you're working with a big bully heel who's outsized you, and so he's imposing his will, he's cheating along top of that,
yep,
being violent, you're taking this, you're firing up. So before you make that comeback, at least I'm thinking during the heat, a high spot is a set of moves. You know, you're trying to get out of something,
right,
or get away from something. And, you know, it's a transition. It's offense, or before, you know, you're trying to make a move. If I'm just working a headlock, finally, if you can shoot me in the ropes, I tackle, you know, maybe you can try to hip toss me. Look, what I'm trying to get at is hope spots.
Right.
A hope spot is a high spot that's placed in a heat. So would you get hope spots in the heat, or is it just the one momentous comeback that you were able to get your stuff in to, you know, in the totality of the match, maybe that guy took 80% of it.
Right, right.
You know, Katie bar the door, finally here, you get your comeuppance, and there's your offense. Or would you put the hope spots in there to build it and then explode, or just explode at the end?
Again, like you said, this is just something that worked for me. For the most part, I was a guy who would get hope spots in, but I was not a guy who was fighting the entire time.
Okay.
I was a guy who, when it was my turn to get the crap beat out of me, I was really getting the snot kicked out of me. I would show fire. I would show life. I wasn't a rag doll and just laid there. But I felt like the audience started to sympathize with me the longer and more aggressive that I was helplessly getting beaten up. And then when it was my turn to fight back, almost, I don't want to say like Hulk Hogan style, but there was a point when I would get hit and I would want more and I would ask for more and I would rip my elbow pads off and maybe curse at the guy. And then the crowd was like, whoa. And then when it was my turn to go, then it was all me. That worked best for me.
Is there any time that you were like in your way and trying to find yourself? And I want to ask you how long that was, but in that babyface role, and selling and adapting this style, and you found out that this was working for you, were you ever in a spot where, okay, you said a lot of times you're working with heels that were established, and so they were probably good enough to stay on you.
Yeah.
Did you ever felt like anybody has left you hanging that you kind of had to say, hey, man, bring it more.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah. There's definitely been...
You're feeling it.
Yeah, exactly. There's definitely been circumstances. It's very rare because I work with a lot of pros, but there have definitely been times on random independent shows where I might feel the crowd is somewhere and the heel might feel that the crowd's somewhere else. And then normally we get on the same page, but there have for sure been circumstances where I'm almost walking the heel through what he should be doing to me.
All right, before we get any further, I have to take a minute here to thank another sponsor who lets me do this for you free twice a week, and that's Dollar Shave Club. There is no reason at all to use a cheap disposable razor or to pay ridiculously high prices for some gimmick razor that's got a laser point with 17 blades in it. Make the smarter choice. Join Dollar Shave Club. Dollar Shave Club is smarter because you get a great shave at a bargain price. So do your face and your wallet a favor and sign up for Dollar Shave Club today. Y'all know how many Dollar Shave Club razors I got hanging around both of my cribs, 316 Gimmick Street and the rental crib at 317 Gimmick Street. So sign up at dollarshaveclub.com/Steve and get Dollar Shave Club delivered right to your front door. Experience the close, smooth shave for yourself. Like I said, Dollar Shave Club is an amazing shave at an affordable price. There's no smarter choice on the market. And right now, they're giving away a one-month trial of their razors for $1 with free shipping. And after that, it's just a few bucks a month. There's no long-term commitments, no hidden fees. You can cancel whenever you want. Get your $1 trial at dollarshaveclub.com/Steve. That's dollarshaveclub.com/Steve.
The Steve Austin Show. The Steve Austin Show.
All right. You talked about working as a baby, but last time I saw and the stuff that I've been seeing, yeah, you're working as a heel.
Right.
You're a hell of a heel. And I'm sure you're a great baby, but I saw more of your heel work.
I prefer working as a heel, too, by the way.
That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
Why so? Because I can tell you're having the time of your life.
There's so many factors to why I enjoy it so much. Number one, I think it's cool to... I've always been fascinated by heels, whether it be in pro wrestling or in movies. Like when I loved the James Bond films, but the reason I loved James Bond was the villains. It wasn't even James Bond. I've always been fascinated by a guy who says or does whatever he wants and the way he manipulates emotion. And I think that's what it comes down to also. I really like being in control. So if I'm in the ring and I'm the heel, I like being able to feel the audience and know when that babyface should start fighting back, know that I'm getting the crowd so riled up and wanting the babyface to come back. I love the entire control of the whole thing. I get more of a rise out of the babyface coming back and beating me up than me being the one who's coming back and the crowd going crazy. I love that environment and that atmosphere. I also feel, for me, I can be, at least the way my brain works, I feel more creative as a heel. I feel like whether it be promo material or whether it be match structure or whether it be facial things I can do in the ring to get a reaction out of people, the insults you can make. There's just so many different things you can do as a bad guy and as a villain that I have the absolute time of my life doing it.
I also think that as a heel, because I preferred working heel as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was a heel up until, you know, we did that double turn in WrestleMania 13.
Right.
And that was a different kind of baby. But to me, the freedom of being a heel, because you can have egg on your face. If you're, I mean, you could be running a high spot and legit trip.
Yep.
And you can pull it off. You can get away with it. You can have egg on your face. You can screw up. But because you have that mat, that creative freedom, the uncharted waters, just, you know, it doesn't matter.
Right.
As that baby face, you know, and of course, you know, I had a pretty good baby face, a different kind of baby face, but there's a certain code that you have to kind of, for the most part, run by. Even a Stone Cold, at my hottest, there's still some code that you must adhere to. It was a lot of gray area in my code, but damn it, as a baby, you just got to be a little bit more traditional. As a heel, anything.
Anything. Yeah, you can literally try, experiment with, do anything you want, because you're right. As a baby face, there's a certain thing that you have to, or a certain bubble that you almost have to stick in. But as a heel, there's a million different things you can do. A million different things you can try. Yeah, yeah.
And I was just looking at you because, like you said, I think you said it right there. There's a kind of things in a bubble you got to stick to as a baby.
Yeah.
Except when it comes time for the comeback.
Right.
That's when you can get out of that bubble. And you don't want to screw up.
But I mean, that's when you can do, I mean, you can rake eyes, you can pull hair, but as dastardly as that heel was to you, then as far as breaking the rules, we're talking about screwing up and just, you know, blowing stuff. But in that comeback, I mean, that's when anything goes, because you're just reversing what that heel did to you. And today, I mean, not today, but sometimes as I'm watching the business, because as we were talking, I just love to watch the business and see what these guys and gals are doing. On that comeback, man, it's so many times people want to get caught up in the bink, 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 the three clotheslines into that. And there's times, there's a time for three clotheslines. But my point is, when I'm talking to some people about a comeback, and as you were talking about your comeback a while ago, you've been beaten down for so damn long, it's rage. And this is finally when either the heel slipped, or it's just you put on the bionic powers and it's time for that comeback, because every babyface rises in every movie. And they're either going to get screwed in the end, or they're going to go over, whatever the finish is. But if you don't explode, and if you're not feeling that, you know, there's so many formula comebacks.
Yeah.
If you have a set move, a set or whatever you want to do during a comeback, it's fine. But if you're not... I could stand there in the middle of the ring with DX, Triple H, all those guys just feeding me and use nothing but a right hand for four or five punches each. And I'm talking about a six-guy feed.
Right.
In the middle of a six, whatever many guys there was, and just throw right hands.
Yep.
And because, and I was connected with them, and those guys were feeding the hell out of me. Basically, our whole roster was full of Hall of Famers. But it's all about a comeback, is rage and getting yours back.
Yep, exactly. Because that's my favorite, because generally speaking, again, all circumstantial. I know I keep saying that. But I love the idea as a heel. Like, normally for me, when I cut my baby face off, I'm pretty angry at first. And I'm really, really aggressive. And then the longer I'm in control, the more arrogant and cocky I get, and borderline lazy, because I feel like I'm in control. And then when that baby face comes back and has that rage that you're talking about, and I get to have that... oh crap, I'm screwed look on my face. That's my favorite part of the match. Yeah. And when the crowd's going along with it the whole time, and again, I'm cowering and all that stuff. That's so, so important. So, so important.
How long do you think it took you to find your way to be a good baby?
I actually think that I learned how to be a good baby face after I learned how to be a good heel.
Really?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Going back to that match with Kyle O'Reilly in, what was it, 2012?
2012, yeah.
Okay, so you were a good baby, but you'd have to have a heel turn before you went back to baby?
Yeah, and I think I didn't truly understand what I wanted or should have been as a baby face until I was the one who was the heel and in control, and then knowing what I wanted from my baby face. So when I was the one working with baby faces and saying, oh, I really like when someone does this or someone does that, and I don't like when they do that, that's when it actually clicked the most for me in my head. I thought I was a fine baby face, but when I figured out how to be a good baby face, it was actually after my first long heel run.
And I agree with that, because that's the same thing that happened to me. I was probably just talking about that initial time when you really felt comfortable being a baby.
Sure. Yeah, probably.
Because I sucked. I mean, when I was green, when I watched stuff back on YouTube from, you know, stuff 90 through almost 91, I was almost a heel from then on until I turned into Stone Cold. But when I watched my early day stuff when I was green as grass, I totally blew. And I think everybody does.
I
except Steamboat and Flair. Well, I saw a Flair match, and he was really green. But I've never seen Steamboat in a green match, but I totally blew. And so, it, you know, going through the paces, you're just working for the formula. You're just thinking shine, heat, come back, go home.
Don't screw up.
Don't screw up, and that's all you're thinking.
Right.
But, yeah, it's like once you get to be a heel, and it's like, oh, okay, here's what it's like to be on the other side of that. I need this guy to do this for me. Or here's what I can do to really make this guy look like $1 million.
Right, exactly. And, too, the coolest thing about the independence and getting to go to Japan and Mexico and travel all over the place is figuring out what crowds want in different areas, too. Because that helped me also. Again, like the way I wrestle as a babyface in North Carolina is different than the way I wrestle as a babyface in L.A. or Chicago or New York City. So I love that challenge of it, too, is finding out what cities respond best. That's why I actually prefer being later on the card, because when I can watch the show and see what the crowd's reacting to and what they're invested in, what they like, what they don't like, then again, I'm still myself, but I do kind of change a little bit of what I do in my tune for each specific match.
Man, in starting to watch a bunch of your matches and stuff from New Japan and Ring of Honor and some stuff from the indie scene, or just the different organizations you work with, God dang, man, there's a lot more talent out there than I thought there was. And so you're in the ring with a bunch of really good guys night in, night out. And the refreshing part, or the part about that I really love, is back in my days in the USWA, we were in a weekly territory, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. It was the same towns week after week after week. So a lot of times, if you and me work in a program, we might be working 6-8 weeks together.
Right.
So every Monday, we're going to be in Memphis. Tuesday, we're going to be in Louisville. We're working a program. Wednesday, Evansville. Thursday, Spot Show. Friday, Dallas. Saturday, Nashville. So we got to change our stuff up. A lot of times, when I was in with WCW or WWE, you get into a big territory. You work with the same guy. Well, now you're traveling all over the United States of America and all over the world. So you can almost have the same match every night if you want to. And I will say that sometimes I did. That's just kind of what a lot of guys do.
Sure.
But I always tell people I was at my best when I was as far as just coming up with it. I was still young in the business. But when you're working with someone every single night in front of a lot of people would follow the show. So you got to change stuff up. My point is, when you're just changing every single time and doing something different and trying, because it forces you to keep your chops up.
Yep.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. And that was very, like when I first started, I remember being so concerned with like changing actual moves that I did. But then the longer that I was working with these guys, it was realizing that even a subtle small transition change can make the entire flow of a match different. And it's not being lazy or it's not it's just not overthinking the circumstance and not overthinking the situation and finding those little things that you can do. Again, working with guys as talented as I've worked with really does make a difference. And on top of that, it's cool to try different things, because again, I'm almost 9 years in, but I'm still obviously constantly learning. So if we always try and experiment with new things, let's say what we try Thursday didn't work as good as Tuesday. Well, now we know, and now we can know, or if I do something Friday and that works better than it did Tuesday, oh, maybe we'll do more of that next time. So it's cool to experiment and change with different stuff.
Okay, need to take care of one of the sponsors who makes this podcast possible and one who's helping you guys live the healthiest life you can. Diamond Dallas Page and DDP Yoga. And to celebrate his induction into the WWE Hall of Fame next month, Dallas is giving y'all a huge deal on the DDP Yoga Now app and all DDPY-related merch. I like it. You'll get 30% off if you go to ddpyoga.com/Austin. And the DDP Yoga Now app has everything you need to get on the path to healthier living. It's got all the DDP Yoga workouts, including the new 2.0 workouts. And you can even do live workouts from the DDP Yoga Performance Center. The app lets you track your progress, give you nutrition tips and recipes. Heck, DDP even hosts a cooking show on the app to help you make healthier meals. I got to check that out. So, jump on this sale and take advantage of the 30% off the DDP Yoga Now app and all DDPY-related merch. DDP Yoga has helped thousands of people to get on the path to healthy living. And if you've been watching Raw, then you've seen Mick Foley. He's dropped over 100 pounds and is in the best shape of his life. And that's thanks to DDP Yoga. So change your life today and celebrate Diamond Dallas Page's induction into the WWE Hall of Fame. Get on the DDPY program. Take advantage of the 30% off sale at ddpyoga.com/Austin. That's 30% off the DDP Yoga Now app and all DDPY-related merch. Go to ddpyoga.com/Austin. That's ddpyoga.com/Austin. Maybe they should put Dallas in the WWE Hall of Fame every single year. More discounts. If you're in the market for a car, then you need to check out TrueCar.com and the TrueCar app. TrueCar gives you the pricing information you need to feel confident about your purchase. When you register with TrueCar, you'll see what other people in your local market paid for the car you want, From there, you can connect with the local TrueCar certified dealer and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. TrueCar shows you real pricing on actual inventory, so you see competitive pricing offered to you by TrueCar certified dealers for vehicles that are actually on their lots. TrueCar makes car buying easy, no matter if you're looking for a brand new or used vehicle. There are over 500,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide, and there are over 13,000 TrueCar certified dealers. And over 2 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar certified dealer network. TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar.com or download the TrueCar app to enjoy a better car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. Let's talk about how and why you got into the business of pro wrestling, because, hell, I didn't know this till I got on your website. I know you've made the rounds. You've done a lot of podcasts. But since I'm here,
I got to.
You got to tell a story.
Yeah, I would love
because
to.
Because I want to, you know, get your take on the business. And then, you know, I got some questions that the fans sent in. We'll get to a Q&A in a minute or in a little while. But tell me about, you know, how you came upon pro wrestling and about how you got the business. And if you want to do long story short, however you want to do it, because I know you've told the story many times.
No, I'd love to tell it again. And it's cool that I'm getting to tell you face to face. So for me, I grew up in a really, really small town. And wrestling when I was growing up was transitioning into that more risque TV-14 style of wrestling. So when my parents were together, they didn't want me to watch it. I didn't really know it existed, but they didn't want me to watch it. My parents split when I was 9. And I started taking karate lessons. And I loved karate. I would get there early. I would stay late Monday through Friday. And my karate instructor, I got there early one day, and he was watching a taped Monday Night Raw from the night before. Remember it clear as day. And on it was yourself and Kane putting Paul Bearer in a sewer. And he looked over at me and he said, "Oh, do you watch pro wrestling?" And I said, "Yeah, I watch it all the time." But I'd never seen it before. I just wanted to fit in with him so bad. Long story short, he lets me borrow WrestleMania 15, the first time you wrestled The Rock. And I only watched it initially because I wanted to fit in again with my karate instructor. But I saw you two wrestle, and I was hooked as a fan from that point on. I watched it all the time, bought the t-shirts. It was just a diehard fan. Didn't even consider being a wrestler until 2 years later when yourself and The Rock wrestled at WrestleMania 17. And with that Limp Bizkit My Way video, with the crowd buzzing before that entrance from yourself happened, and then the glass broke and 67,000 people rose to their feet, it was the first time ever that I got goosebumps in my life. It was the first time I was ever moved by anything. And I remember just feeling deep down, like in that very moment, I'm like, I have to be a pro wrestler. I have to. So from that point on, just a diehard fan. I don't know if you want me to go into this, but I started training to be a pro wrestler when I was a senior in high school. And I trained at this Blood and Guts promotion, but a great independent wrestling promotion, Combat Zone Wrestling in Philadelphia. So I actually started pro wrestling when I was still a senior in high school, which was cool.
How was that?
Yeah, it was good. Our trainers were tough on us for sure. I've
heard some of the stories.
Yeah, like we had to bump on the concrete.
But here's the thing: when you're 16, 17 years old, you're not thinking, "Hey, this ain't the smartest thing in the world because these guys are telling us to do it, so this must be the thing to do."
Exactly. We thought that was pro wrestling training, you know. So it was rough, but it was good. It toughened me up too.
So what's your take that night at the Astrodome? Man, I'd been to Astrodome for many different occasions, rodeos and stuff like that. Man, I remember hearing that we were going to be there. It was really cool because it was my, 100 miles from where I grew up.
Yeah.
And then, man, to be in there with The Rock, who's one of my favorite opponents of all time and a really, really good friend, and just totally trust each other. And to go out there, and we lit that place up pretty damn good. And
I'm going
to sit there and blow a bunch of smoke up my ass because we're not doing anything like you guys are doing these days. But just off that match, and that was a badass back-and-forth match. And then all of a sudden, no DQ, here comes Vince. I end up turning heel, but just to go out there, and we were talking on the phone before you came over, and that entrance, man, when that glass broke and I came out there, and I knew I was switching heel, but I had that BMF walk anyway. And just walking, it seemed like 100 yards to the ring, and then getting in there and hitting them turnbuckles, and then here comes The Rock. And this is one of those things that that bill, that My Way bill and that five-minute package that they put together, me shoving that beer in his chest and we slapping those beers and we start trading off. Yep. And I double-legged him, took him down. And you got Paul Heyman in there just laying down the track. We did that sit-down interview with Jim Ross. Tension mm-hmm. was high. And so there was only one way to start that match because it was already built. All we had to do was light it. And that was, boy, as soon as Rock turned around, I lit into his ass with a bunch of right hands, and boom, we took him on about a 24, 25-minute ride. That was great.
Yeah.
But what you guys are doing these days is awesome. Tell me about your thoughts of what the business has evolved to, because you started watching back then, say about, you know, WrestleMania 15. This year coming up is WrestleMania 33, so you've been watching everything from then on.
Yep.
And now you've been working with some of the best talent in the world, of which yourself would be included. How do you think, or what do you think, as you look back to Rock and Roll versus Midnights, mm-hmm. Rock and Roll versus Arn and Ole, to, man, one of my favorite tag teams down there in NXT is Revival.
Yep.
Dash and Dawson.
Yep.
But just as far as what you guys are doing, the six-man match you had with you, the Young Bucks, Ricochet, Ospreay, and Sydal?
Yep, yep, that's it.
God dang. Man, I only caught a five-minute clip, and it was highlights of that match. I don't know where I could find it in its entirety. What are your thoughts on where the business was to what you guys have taken it to?
I think more and more in 2017, pro wrestling is very much falling into that shades of gray mentality. And I think it even started looking at the history of it. It did kind of start with the Attitude Era, where they were more accepting that not every babyface had to be a prototypical babyface. Not every heel had to be a prototypical heel. And you see more and more now, again, that they're almost embracing the idea of the fans showing up and cheering and supporting who they want to support. It's definitely gone more the route as far as physically, a more athletic style, that's for sure. But again, as far as who the fans support, I think they like that team atmosphere idea of, again, AJ Styles and John Cena. You have 50% for AJ, 50% for Cena, and it creates this really cool, fun atmosphere. Because, again, what I'm involved in with Bullet Club, we're supposed to be the number one heel faction, but we have a ton of support and a ton of people cheer for us and support us. But at the same time, a lot of people also cheer for our baby faces. So again, you got this dueling chant atmosphere going on in pro wrestling. And that's not just in Ring of Honor and New Japan. You see that in WWE as well. So that's definitely kind of where I see it going as far as emotionally, is people embracing the idea of picking and choosing who you root for, who you like, who's a star. And it's creating this very cool back and forth live sporting event atmosphere almost.
But do you think with watching that, and I, you know, I still believe in heels and babies.
Me too.
But I believe that, man, if given, you know, your own time to create your own thoughts and to convey those thoughts on the horn or through your body language and through your angles, you know, then the fans will decide, well, golly, this guy's a piece of trash. I hate him.
Yep.
Oh, no, this guy's kind of ruthless, but I'm digging him. So he's going to be a baby.
Yep. Yep.
So I'm down with that. But I think the fans got to choose.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe in heels and baby faces.
Me too. And that's something I've embraced early. I remember when after I lost the Ring of Honor World Championship, I was getting cheered more and more on my entrance. And I remember thinking, what do I have to do to make this go away? I want to get booed. But then I've come to the realization that I've been around Ring of Honor long enough that people who are going to these events recognize me, and when my music hits, they'll get excited. So my goal from now on, like for example, I had a match with Kyle O'Reilly at Final Battle, which is Ring of Honor's WrestleMania. When I came through the curtain and he came through the curtain, I got the bigger pop. I got the bigger, more cheers. But then my goal as the match was going on and this happened, by the end of it, every single person was chanting for O'Reilly. So I've come to terms now too with, they can cheer me through the entrance. They can cheer me when they see me, but then it's my goal in that 20, 25, 30 minutes to get everybody invested in that baby face. That's my job.
And then sometimes, I mean, just on a heel reaction in a positive light, it's like, hey, man, you're a star.
Right.
And people recognize that. It's like, hey, man, let's see what I can do with them during the match. But at the end of the day, you know, whether it's a cheer or boo, and I always strive to be either a heel or a baby. I wasn't trying to be a tweener, mm-hmm. for some I was. But for me, it was all or nothing. And so, like in Bullet Club, y'all are just because the, some of the footage I watched when AJ was still in and Gallo and Carl Anderson were still in, I mean, man, the strength in numbers and then just the whole click thing, I mean, a lot of it was like NWO type stuff.
Exactly.
But it was so cool, you know, a lot of people are going to gravitate towards that, and that's fine. But because it takes, dude, it doesn't take just great babies to draw a house. You have to have great heels. And whether you like them, love them, I mean, whether you love them or hate them, they're a big part of the show. they're the exact same equation of the show. If you ain't got a heel that's over, you have a baby that's super over, but that baby wants to work with a heel that's super over as well. It's the totality of the card and the fact that people going to make up their mind. As long as you got stars, you're going to have a crowd.
Exactly, exactly. And I think people, too, have really gravitated to Bullet Club again because people growing up watched factions like the NWO. So now they're seeing all their favorites come together and do all this NWO esque stuff, and again, you know, beating down these baby faces, saying whatever they want, doing whatever they want. But in turn, while these baby faces get over, exactly like you said, if you have heels that are over and baby faces that are over, then you get these cool dream match scenarios that people actually want to pay money to see and watch.
And the thing is interesting, like with AJ, because man, I've been so happy when he picked up AJ. He's one of the best workers in the world, and has been around so long. He had that cup of coffee with WWE a long time ago, and now for him to be in the main spot, and he's coming there, and every single at bat he's blasted over the center field fence. So I'm so happy for that guy to get a damn shot and succeed as well as he has.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I've known that AJ Styles is one of the best, if not the best wrestlers I've ever been in the ring with, based on personal experience and matches with him. But again, the way that AJ's been able to constantly reinvent himself as well, like when he departed from TNA, everyone was kind of unsure of what he was going to do. He blew it out of the water. I mean, he went to New Japan. I think AJ deserves a lot of credit for a lot of people in the States getting into New Japan, because a lot of people were like, oh, AJ Styles is over in New Japan Pro Wrestling, and AJ's having these 5-star matches with Nakamura and Okada and Tanahashi, just tearing the house down every night. Coming to Ring of Honor, AJ doesn't get a lot of credit either. It's a known fact that when AJ was released from, or was let go or left TNA, when he got booked for Ring of Honor, he sold upwards of like 800 tickets because he was booked for the show. So AJ's a star. He was a star then. He's an even bigger star now. And it's cool to see him just killing it.
Okay, talk about the 6-man match that I just referred to about 5 or 10 minutes ago. With respect to the in-ring product, this was a question I was really trying to ask. Where else can the business go? I mean, to me, I mean, that's about... it's about 7,000 RPM. I mean, it's you're almost redlining the entire match, and I only saw the highlights of it. It's just spectacular. But I would dare to think not to creatively stifle anybody. I just don't know of anything else that could be done to top that.
Right.
And it looked like the way y'all had it laid out, everything built sequentially and climaxed the way that it did. But I just, athletically, I can't see the business evolving any more than that.
Yeah, I know. It's becoming more and more challenging to come up with innovative and creative things. We are very aware, though, that when it is a big weekend and it's a big match, that's when we bring out the big guns. And that's not to say that other events or other shows, we're not working our absolute hardest. But that specific weekend was PWG's Battle of Los Angeles weekend. So that's like their biggest weekend of the year. So at that time and under that circumstance, we said, hey, let's just blow it out of the water. Let's do everything that we can. We might never have this match again. Let's go crazy. Again, we still try to perform and do an athletic as match as possible. But for that specific circumstance, that was like, let's bring everything we have. Let's do everything we have. And let's just give these people a show. But in turn, too, like even with guys like the Young Bucks are very smart about having things in their act that doesn't require them to take a lot of crazy, unnecessary risks.
That's one of the things that I've come to appreciate about those guys.
Yeah.
Watching some of the videos, please continue.
Right. So and I think that is kind of the route and direction that wrestling is going, in the sense of there are so many guys on the independents that can do so many cool things athletically. We were talking about this earlier, and just these super impressive, awesome things that I can't do, things that the Young Bucks can't even do. But the reason that I think we are where we're at is because of certain character traits or certain things that the fans can latch onto and attach to.
Thank you, because that's what I was getting.
Yeah.
You guys have well-rounded characters. You're not just movesets. You have you bring emotions out of people. People care for you, whether they love you or they hate you. You're a heel right now. People can't stand you.
Right.
But the Bay Bay stuff is pretty fun. How did that come about?
Man, so totally by mistake, actually. So I'm a huge Chris Jericho fan, and I'm also a huge Joey Matthews fan, Mercury. So obviously, Chris Jericho used to always exaggerate baby to the point where he'd say Bay Bay. But really, the whole reason I started saying my name and Bebe at the end was because I was watching Joey Matthews on these independent shows, and when Joey Matthews was working as a heel, he used to over and over again put his arms in the air and yell Joey Matthews, Joey Matthews. And I was like, that's brilliant, because if anyone doesn't know who he is, everyone's going to know who he is by the end of this match. And he used to do it over and over and over again. So I was like, oh, I'm going to do that. But I added, initially it was just Adam Cole Baby.
Yeah.
Then it got more and more exaggerated. And then people started doing it with me. Initially, when I first started doing it, no one would do it. You know, they hated it. They thought it was terrible and awful. So it's amazing that that's gotten over now. And that's something that people can't wait to do on my entrance or in the ring or anything like that.
But you got it over.
I got it over.
You got the building blocks to get it over.
Right. It took me years, but I got it over.
When I look at your work in a ring, man, I see Adam Cole. I mean, because you don't really remind me of anybody. I mean, there's athletic stuff, and sometimes I see AJ, I see a little bit of Shawn Michaels, see a little bit of Chris Jericho, but you don't remind me of anybody I've ever seen. You seem very original, but something and some people went into influencing how and who and what you are, but your interpretation is all your own. That being said, with as many syllables as I used to say it, who were some of your influences coming up as a baby or as a heel that influenced you in the vein of style of work?
Sure. Again, like we had mentioned, Chris Jericho, huge fan and someone I studied a lot. Another guy that's on everybody's list, I think, is Shawn Michaels. I mean, the guy's ability to work as a babyface or as a heel, I think he's an underrated promo, too. I mean, I just thought he was fantastic. But another guy that really influenced me as well is, even before I got into wrestling, or when I just started wrestling, I was always such a promo guy, where I would study promos, and I loved promos, and I loved the ability from certain guys to get emotion out of people with just their words. So a guy that really captivated me, actually, was CM Punk as far as his promos.
Yep.
I used to watch. He's the reason I got into Ring of Honor in the first place. I remember hearing about the CM Punk guy, buying a DVD and watching this promo that he cut on Raven and being like, I've never seen anything like this before at the time. So I to this day will go and watch promos that he does because they've influenced me so much. Like for me in Ring of Honor, I've gotten over or attention sometimes more so for promo work that I've done than even necessarily matches, because we have a great video package guy at Ring of Honor. So I'll go down to the studio and we'll make this really cool video package that he'll edit. And I very much so realize the importance of what promos are to a character, especially my character. Mm-hmm. So I invest just as much time on promo work, if not more sometimes, than even in ring stuff.
Well, man, I tell you what, CM Punk was certainly a tremendous promo guy.
Yeah.
And a guy who should influence many people. I mean, that guy, really, when I think of a CM Punk promo, highly unique.
Yep.
Because the guy is super smart. He has a real dry wit and some sarcasm about him. He's a laser on that horn. He can just shred you, and he can come off, if he's working heel, as a total prick. I mean,
and in his eyes too, like, I believe every single word that he says,
and that's probably the biggest part of it.
Yeah.
But he when I think of a CM Punk promo, I just think just laser focus, and he is so at ease talking. Mm-hmm. And full of confidence, and like you said, he believes every single thing he's saying. Just lends. I had my trash style of promo, but and to your point, whatever works for you.
Right.
So you found what works for you, but CM Punk is damn sure a good person to study if you're trying to learn how to cut a promo. So then in thinking about promos, when you're riding down the road, when you're traveling, I mean, there on the indie scene, or if it's a Ring of Honor or Daresay Japan, are you guys still traveling tour buses in Japan?
Yeah. We're over in the tour buses in Japan. So
take me on a tour bus inside Japan, because I was a stateside worker. The longest I ever spent in Japan was a 3-week tour. That was when I tore my tricep on the third night of the tour. Wrestled for 2.5 weeks with a torn tricep. A lot of tags, a lot of 6-man tags. And myself and Arn Anderson, Ron Simmons were about to go crazy. Yeah. We were drinking every beer in sight just because we weren't used to Japan.
Sure.
I love the work over there. I love the culture. I love Japan. But we were stateside workers.
Yeah.
So the question is, I'm not talking about the shenanigans or the nightlife, nothing like that. I'm talking with respect to, what are you doing? Are y'all dissecting matches? Y'all talking the wrestling business? You thinking about promos? Where's your head at?
Oh,
you letting the steam off? What?
The entire time, we're all of us are talking about wrestling. Lots of times, my travel buddies for me when I'm on the road is I'm with the Young Bucks and Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian.
That's a good crew.
Yeah, it's a great crew. And not only because those guys are great guys, but the reason we all connect is we all share that passion for wrestling. You know, we're booking the territory. we're talking about different ideas, different concepts. It's a blast. We all love it so much that that's all we want to talk about. We talked about this too. When I'm home, I don't know what to do with myself. But when I'm with my buddies on the road and we're talking about wrestling, that's when I'm at my happiest. And I feel I'm at my sharpest when we're talking about it all the time too. So that's all we're doing. We're 24/7 talking about merchandising ideas, finishes for matches, angles down the line, going over a match that we had a month ago with different ideas or what ifs or different concepts. It's the business 24/7.
Man, that's good to hear, because I always tell people, man, if you ain't living, breathing, eating, sleeping in the business, I mean, you're probably going to be second best or second tier, because if that's all, hey, there's going to be some, you know, genetic, you know, limitations maybe imposed on some people. But my point is, you're all in. And if you ain't all in, you're never going to be on top unless it's a damn fluke. You got to live, eat, breathe, live the business. And so it's good to hear that you guys are doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no question either. Like when I tell people, I'll do like some of these Ring of Honor seminars, and they always ask me what my number one piece of advice is. And it sounds like such a broad, generic statement, but if it clicks with them, it really will make a difference. Again, if pro wrestling is your number one priority, you will go as far with this as you possibly can. There can be no question in your mind. There can be no hesitation. Like for me, not the smartest idea in the world, I didn't go to college. The reason I didn't go to college is I didn't want that 1% in my brain to say, I have a backup plan if this doesn't work out. I wanted to say that I have to make it as a wrestler or I'm screwed, you know? So I put myself in a situation where I needed to succeed and I needed to make it and I needed to travel. So I always tell people that too. And it shouldn't even... Of course, there is sacrifice to this job. Of course, it's hard. It's difficult. It's hard on your body. It's hard if you're away from your families. But at the same time, too, if this really feels like work 24/7, maybe you shouldn't be doing it either, because I'm having the time of my life. I absolutely love this.
That's
absolutely
what I tell everybody, man. I said it was the best job I ever had. I said it's a real hard way to make a living.
Yeah, absolutely. Tough on
you. And especially... If you have a wife, it's harder. If you have a kid, it's harder. If you have two kids, I mean, it's just everything adds incrementally or exponentially. The more stuff you have, it's just a rough life.
Sure.
Because you're always gone. And you got to be gone, because that's just what the job entails.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
I think it's fun.
It's so much fun. It's so much fun.
I just saw this on my Google alert. I was talking on a guy's podcast the other day, Brendan Schaub, former MMA fighter, Big Brown Breakdown. And I think it was, you know, they're one of the MMA guys or something that said that, you know, pro wrestling life, wasn't tough. And I pretty much summed it up for him. You know, you take that camp and you go out on the road, different, you know, take your camp and just travel with it. And then get back in the car. Nobody's helping you. You know, bad hotels, the whole nine yards. And you get back to me in 10 or 15 years after you go do all that and tell me what your experience was. Even if you're just, you know, working out an octagon instead of being in a squared circle, it's a tough damn life. But holy smokes, I had a blast.
Right. Yeah, yeah. There's nothing quite like it. There's nothing like being able to... I've said this before. My grandmother, she passed away. But she told me a couple years ago, she goes, where were you this weekend? I said, oh, I was in England. And she goes, I've always wanted to go to England. And I was thinking about it. I'm like, I'm getting to travel the world on somebody else's dime, doing what I love to do, coming home with money, making bonds and friendships that will never go away, and then meeting a bunch of people who share that same passion, telling me how much they enjoy what I do. Like, it's the ultimate. It's the ultimate dream. It's like what you fantasize about as a kid. There's nothing better than
okay, it. Okay, so you love it. I loved it. I'm out of it. I've been out of it since 2003. You're 27 years old.
Yeah.
It's 2017. You got the stitches in the forehead right mm-hmm. now. But other than that, how's the body feel? How beat up are you? How banged up are you? Because I'm gonna imagine at 27, God dang, you probably want 10, 15 more years in business.
Minimum. Yeah, for sure.
How are you feeling? What are you doing to take care of your body?
Yeah. For me, actually, what's really helped post-surgery on my left arm has been yoga. That's helped me a ton, helped me a lot with my mobility and how I feel and stuff like that. And for me, too, I'm one of those guys where I can lose weight fairly easily, and I'm a hard gainer. So when I came back from surgery, I had some extra fat that I wanted to get rid of. So I worked real, real hard on trying to get my abs back and lean out a little bit. Now I'm in the process of trying to gain some weight again. So for me, it's this constant fluctuation of okay, trimming up a little bit. All right, now I'm going to gain a little bit of weight, but I'm at a good place now with as far as being lean, where I'm happy with the idea of trying to put weight on. So it's a lot of heavy weight lifting, a lot of Olympic style lifting. I force myself to eat a lot, but yeah, I work out on the road when I can. Obviously, if I'm home, I work out, but I also make sure again for how I feel. Yoga has really changed my. And not just saying this, DDP yoga is exactly what I do. It's helped
Are
me
you
a ton.
With me?
Yeah, I swear
You're
to God,
a DDP yoga guy.
I'm a DDP yoga guy. I love it. I love it.
What got you turned on to that? Because, as you know, I used to live with Dallas, you know, when I first came to L.A. He's my longtime travel partner, one of my best friends. And he came by when I was living in Malibu, and you know, we did yoga together. And me, I'm a gym guy. But everybody who's tried his program or yoga in general just raves about it if they stick with it. How long you been doing it?
Yeah, I've been doing it for about, since post-surgery. So like 2 years now I've been doing it.
So what's your protocol? I mean, because I know he's got the DDPY, the 20-minute gimmick, the 30-minute. You can do whatever you want. But what is your set deal? I mean, every day you'll do some form of yoga or a couple of days a week? What is it?
Yeah, for me, normally, if I can do yoga 3 days a week, I'm really happy about that. And even sometimes it's just the one that's only 20 minutes, like the beginner one, just because, again, like he says in his program, it's all about the intensity that you have while doing it. And for me, I more do it even less as a workout, but more, again, to stay mobile. How I feel after I'm done, I feel like a new person. Like, it really, really makes a huge difference, especially with us being on the road so much and I'm working out when we're home. It really, really helped me.
How long does it take for you to become proficient at doing like a downward dog? I mean, here's a hero pose or whatever the names are. Dude, I've tried a couple of them. And when you see someone who's done yoga for a long time, it's like, oh, Jesus, that's so stupid. They just got this pose. And all of a sudden you try to do it. It's like, not so fast, my friend.
Yeah.
So my question is, how long did it take you to acclimate to it, just to be able to hold the poses and do all that stuff Dallas does?
Yeah, I noticed for me, after about a month of doing it, my body really started changing. Like, there were lots of times where he would have the alternative pose instead of the actual pose that oftentimes I have no shame in admitting. Like, over half of the program, I'm doing the alternate pose because I never stretch. I never do. It bores me to death. But yoga makes me feel like I'm working out and stretching at the same time. So for me, about a month in, and I'm still getting better. That's the cool thing too. I'm constantly, each month or each week, I feel like the poses are getting deeper. I can hold it for longer. I feel better. It's overall, again, the cool thing about yoga is I feel like it's this constant improvement. There's no such thing as like mastering it. You know,
are you able to let your mind drift when you do yoga? Because some people are into the meditational aspects of it, mm-hmm. along with the physical part that goes with it. But I mean, are you trying to be like, just have no thought? Or are you thinking sequences and high spots and creativity? Where's your head?
I try, for me, when I'm in the gym or I'm doing yoga, I actually, it's really hard for me in the gym because I'm listening to, you know, I'm a big hip hop guy, so I'm listening to music, and music brings out emotion in me. And when I have emotion, I think about wrestling. So I'm really thinking about wrestling a lot when I'm hitting the weights. But as far as yoga, I am really able to completely clear my mind and like recharge my batteries and really not think about anything. Again, when I first started doing it, I wasn't able to do that as well, but the longer I've done it, the more I've been able to just enjoy it for what it is and just have that break and have that relaxation where I'm actually not thinking about wrestling, my personal life, I'm not thinking about anything.
hey, man, I didn't think that you'd be into the Olympic lifts. So you're talking about clean and jerk, snatch? What are you talking?
Yeah, yeah, clean and jerk I do. And, or stuff like, you know, obviously deadlifting, clean and jerk. I'm not great at snatching. I'm getting better at it. I think it's because I'm scared with my shoulder for sure. But I have done it before, and I keep practicing it and getting better. But for me, my body responds best as far as gaining weight to those heavy-style Olympic lifts.
That's Mula the Watchdog cutting off the conversation here. Well, they're giving us a go-home cue. Why don't we wrap this thing up, come back with some questions from the fans that they sent into my email account. Got some more time?
That sounds great.
But before we go, there was a show you wanted to promote, and it's an up-and-coming Ring of Honor thing, and what else you want to talk about right now before we close up?
Yeah, sure. For me, again, Ring of Honor has this show, Supercard of Honor, in Lakeland, Florida, WrestleMania weekend. It's always a really, really great weekend, not just for Ring of Honor, but wrestling fans in general. We get wrestling fans from all over the world who want to come check out Ring of Honor. It's going to be a stacked show, and awesome show. All the best guys from Ring of Honor will be there. You can find information on that on ROHWrestling.com, as well as a bunch of other upcoming events. If you want to support me, support Ring of Honor, because that's where I'm at. So, but real big show coming up.
Okay, and is that going to be the day before Mania?
Yeah, April 1st.
April 1st.
Yep.
Is it an April Fool's joke, right?
Yeah, not an April Fool's joke. I promise we'll be there. Ring of Honor and all of its roster will be there.
All right, Adam Cole at Ring of Honor with Ring of Honor there in Orlando?
Lakeland, Florida.
Florida.
Yep.
On April 1st. Y'all check it out. All right, everybody, give me the go home. Q, it's time to wrap up his podcast and ride off in the sunset. Before I do, I want to thank Adam Cole for coming by the crib today. It was real nice meeting that guy. Hell of a damn hand in the ring. Great promo. I've had a chance to watch, man, I tell you about 10 or 15 of his matches, watch his promos, read about him. God dang, kid's got a real bright future, 27 years old, about 9 years under his belt, already a hellacious worker, only Ring of Honor three-time world champion. So I think that speaks for itself. Good talking to you, Adam. Look forward to seeing you again. I'll catch you down the road. Hey, man, before I let you guys go and give you some plugs, I want to give you a video to watch. And while I was researching Adam Cole, I come across this six-man tag match. I can't find the match in its entirety. It's just a highlight reel. But if you go on YouTube and you type in Will Ospreay, Ricochet, and Matt Sydal versus Adam Cole and the Young Bucks, highlights, five-star wrestling. Right now, it's got about 52,723 views. Man, it's 6 minutes and 14 seconds. Highlights of this match. I don't know how long the entire match lasted, but God dang, I never thought that the business would evolve into what it's evolved into. And this thing, this match, the highlights is absolutely spectacular. So I'm looking forward to seeing the whole match in its entirety. All these guys, just tremendous timing, working their asses off. The Pro Wrestling Guerrilla crowd was just eating it up. Hellacious finish, all kinds of stuff. All the bells and whistles and some character building stuff and some real fun stuff in there by the Young Bucks. Well, everybody actually. Everybody got their stuff in, as we would say in the business, and then some. So anyway, that's my clip of the week. And if you can find that match, I'm sure, I don't know if that was on a pay-per-view or if that was on just Ring of Honor programming. Anyway, I'm not real familiar with all of the Ring of Honor stuff, but obviously this is a match. If you can find it, seek it out, and I'm going to seek it out, and I'll report back to you. But just check out that highlight reel. Send me an email to questions at steveaustinshow.com. And, man, I'm going to head down to Texas. You're going to hear part two of my conversation with Adam Cole next Tuesday. And I ask you guys, on Twitter, my Twitter account, Steve Austin BSR. Hey, man, if you got a question for Adam, send it to me, and I'll ask him. So my Q&A session that you guys provided the questions to will drop next Tuesday. I'm going to do my own BS Q&A on the Unleashed show. So if you've got any questions you want me to shoot the breeze about, send them to questions at steveaustinshow.com. I'm going to record this podcast down at the Broken Skull Ranch while I'm down there shed hunting and doing some work. So everything flies, including the kitchen sink, a Q&A. Send me questions to questions at steveaustinshow.com. And stay tuned next Tuesday for part two with Adam Cole for the questions that you provided me to ask him. Anyway, hey man, all the shirts that you've seen me wear on last season's Broken Skull Challenge, they're at ProWrestlingTees.com/Steve Austin and BrokenSkullRants.com. We released 8 extra t-shirts about a month ago. All those t-shirts are on there. And if you're looking for badass beer, look no further than Steve Austin's Broken Skull IPA from El Segundo Brewing. Stop into the brewery if you're in L.A., 140 Main Street, El Segundo, California. Pick it up in California at Whole Foods and Total Wines. Or order it from InsideTheCellar.com if you live in a state they ship to. And you can find everything Steve Austin at BrokenSkullRanch.com, including both of my pocket knives from Cold Steel. I got the Broken Skull, and I've got the new knife. You wanted a cheaper, less expensive knife, but still badass quality? I came out with Cold Steel knives. The working man. This is a badass knife. Sharp as a razor, just like the Broken Skull. Priced at the working man. Designed a different pocket clip for this one. Goes in and out of your pocket a lot easier because you're going to be working all day. You're going to be carrying this damn knife with you, and it's a dandy. Check it out at Amazon.com, ColdSteelKnives.com, and BrokenSkullRanch.com. It's a badass knife, and if you want to spend a little bit more money, there's that Broken Skull. That thing is super bad. They're both badass. I got to stop saying badass so much. Anyway, I got to say one more thank you to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show. It's how I'm able to do this podcast for you free twice a week. And you can find all my sponsors at podcast1.com. Just click on the Killer Deals button at the top of the page and then click on the Steve Austin Show banner. So thanks to Hanes. Just go to Hanes.com and use the promo code FRESHAUSTIN to get 25% off your purchase of Hanes with Fresh IQ products. Dollar Shave Club. Go to dollarshaveclub.com/Steve to start your 1-month trial for just $1 with free shipping. DDP Yoga. Go to ddpyoga.com/Austin to get 30% off the DDP Yoga Now app and all DDPY-related merch because Dallas is going into the WWE Hall of Fame 2 days before WrestleMania 33. And just a reminder that the Steve Austin Show is also a participant in the Amazon Associates Program, an affiliate advertising program designed to provide a means for me to earn fees by linking to Amazon.com. You can link to Amazon at podcast1.com by clicking on the Killer Deals button at the top of the page. Hey, the 60-second AP News headlines are coming up next. Until then, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at podcast1.com. That's podcastone.com.